On our last episode, we spoke with Dr. Nancy Rodriguez about her research on prison violence. Today, we're going to bring things closer to home here in the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. We're recording here today from the SCI Camp Hill Prison, where we'll speak with Bill Nicklow, a longtime corrections veteran and head of security for the department. He'll tell us about his interesting career in corrections. He'll also pull the curtain back a bit to tell us what the department is doing to combat prison violence in Pennsylvania. Stay tuned as we explore the practical side of the research and data around prison violence. Hello, I'm Brett Buckland. You're listening to Pracademically Speaking, a conversation where ideas and numbers get real. Today, we're recording at the SCI Camp Hill Prison and speaking with Bill Nicklow, Deputy Superintendent for Facility Security and Special Operations for the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Hey, how you doing? Glad to be here, Brett.
Well, Bill, you and I have worked together for a long time, several different projects. We could have multiple episodes to talk about the different projects we've worked on together. One of them is the Prison Violence Consortium Project with Dr. Nancy Rodriguez, which was the focus of our last episode on the podcast. To begin with, could you just introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them about your background and career in corrections?
Sure. I started with the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections in 2005, right here at SCI Camp Hill as a corrections officer trainee. I worked my way up through the ranks here at Camp Hill as a corrections officer one, a sergeant, and a lieutenant. Spent most of that time in our security level five housing units between our restricted housing unit and our special management unit. I was fortunate enough, a position came open at central office and I applied for it. It was a special projects manager dealing with security technology in what was then called our security division. It's now the Bureau of Facility Security and Special Operations. And I was fortunate enough to be selected as a lieutenant, as a special projects manager. And there I got to really work with all of the security technologies that the department uses and the specialized equipment that the department uses, really doing testing and evaluation and policy implementation for those systems. From there, I had an opportunity to be an inspection captain for Regional Deputy Secretary John Murray at the time. And in that role, I really reviewed the physical security of the facilities, of all the facilities that were under the central region, and the use of forces that were going on inside those facilities. So I reviewed all the use of force incidents and reviewed the physical security of those facilities for the Regional Deputy Secretary. I was then part of what was called the Supply Chain Transformation Initiative for transportation. And we were looking at how we transported inmates, high-risk inmates, and lower-risk inmates for our bus transports and our sedan transports throughout the department. And that parlayed into an opportunity to bring the SCI Benner Transportation Hub online whenever that opened up in 2014. So I moved up to the Office of Population Management as a captain and oversaw bringing that transportation hub online. I did that for about 2 years, and then the opportunity to be the director of the Office of Population Management came about. And Brett, you and I worked on some pretty prolific projects during my time.
I think that's when I first met you.
Yeah.
Just for the listeners, talk a little bit about what population management does.
So the Office of Population Management's responsibility within the department is really, SCI Camp Hill is the diagnostic and classification center for the entire department for male inmates. So they'll determine what the risks and needs are for those inmates when they come in using diagnostic and classification tools and to do that assessment. And then the Office of Population Management's primary responsibility is really to take those individuals and determine where those needs are available based on the risks and needs that were determined during the classification process, and then put them in the appropriate facilities. They also do any kind of intradepartmental transports that have to occur for various security-related reasons, whether that's violence-related or separations from issues that occurred on the street that spill over into the facilities. So in the course of a year, you know, they do about 52,000 petitions, which are requests to transfer an inmate, and they review those. And Brett, like you said, we worked on the IADSS model to kind of automate a huge chunk of that really, really cumbersome work.
That'd be a great episode for a whole other episode.
Yeah. From there, I had the opportunity to go. I was the director of population management for about 3 years, and then I had an opportunity to go back to SEI Camp Hill as a major unit management, and I took that opportunity. And I came back here, and I was here for about a year. I went out to the Bureau of Investigation and Intelligence as the major of intelligence, and I did that for about a year. But that was in 2018, and in 2018 we had a statewide lockdown of our facilities because of a drug epidemic that was going through our facilities. Synthetic cannabinoids were being introduced at a very high rate. I call them jail drugs, Suboxone and these synthetic cannabinoids, because they were easy to conceal to get into the facilities, and they were easy to conceal and distribute throughout the facilities. And we'll talk a little bit about that later, because that is one of the, I think, major drivers of some of the violence that goes on inside of our facilities. Then I had an opportunity to go to SEI Cole Township as the Deputy Superintendent for Facilities Management. And then an opportunity came up for me to come back to SEI Camp Hill. All roads lead back to Camp Hill in central office for me, as the Deputy Superintendent for Centralized Services. Then I was the Deputy Superintendent. I moved over to the Deputy Superintendent for Facilities Management prior to my current position as the Deputy Superintendent and Director of the Bureau of Facility Security and Special Operations. So
you've seen it all in corrections. You've been kind of all over the place, multiple different roles. I got to ask you, what was your favorite position and that you've had, and why?
Probably being the deputies at facilities, because you can impact some direct change. You get an opportunity to kind of interpret the want from central office, the directive, and then you get an opportunity to interpret what that is and figure out how to apply that in a practical aspect to the facility, to the people that are doing the work, the boots on the ground. So you get an opportunity to interact with those staff, the corrections officers and those support staff that are inside the facilities on a daily basis, and an opportunity to interact with the inmates on a daily basis. You kind of really get to see what those drivers are behind the directions that the department's going into, and get to see that real impact of that.
Now, tell us more about your current role. What's the purview and the responsibilities of your office now in your current role?
So the Bureau of Facility Security and Special Operations' primary mission is to be customer service and support to the facilities, right? And the type of customer service and support we provide to the facilities is really making sure that they have the tools and the resources that they need to do the job from a security perspective. So the security technology equipment, we oversee all the special operations teams that can help manage a critical incident, from our critical incident managers to our corrections emergency response teams to our hostage negotiation teams, our critical incident stress management teams, our hostage rescue teams, our corrections rifle specialist teams, and even our fugitive apprehension search team on the parole side of the house. That work with our U.S. Marshals Task Force and parole absconders to bring them back.
Switching gears a little bit, now let's get into some prison violence discussion. You and I traveled around the country for 5 years with the Prison Violence Consortium with Dr. Rodriguez. So you're familiar with the project. You know that her report is pretty much finalized. She was on the last episode to speak about that. What were some of your major takeaways from that report?
I like the analytical approach to looking at things, and I think that one of the most interesting things for me from that report is really the breakdown of not only the violence that's occurring in our facilities, but really some of those drivers behind that. I thought was really, really interesting, and the correlation between what we're doing and what other states are doing, same problems, right? And the lens that we look at them through is sometimes a little bit different. Some of the language that we use is obviously a little bit different, but some of the perspectives and the way that we tackle those problems is a little bit different. So to me, the biggest takeaway from that whole experience was really allowing myself to kind of step back analytically and look through those other lenses and have that respect for the way that people look at those problems and develop solutions for those problems. And I think that's just going to make us better moving forward.
Was there anything that surprised you?
I think I probably had some biases going into it that maybe were kind of, you know, obviously you think that the younger inmate population is going to be the more violent population, and I think that was kind of represented in that report.
Yep.
So maybe just confirm some of those things that you kind of make yourself critically aware that maybe that's a bias, but no, the data supports that. That's real. And you can see that every day just from an experiential perspective. So anything that was incredibly surprising, not really. I just think that it just gives you that, it solidifies that data and that evidence to say, hey, we're on the right track. These are the problems. Maybe the solutions that we've been pursuing aren't the best solutions and we need to kind of course correct. But nothing that really, I don't think, surprised me.
Well, I want to get more into prison violence here in Pennsylvania in our department, but we need to take a quick break. So don't go away. When we come back, we're going to talk more specifics about our department and what's going on with prison violence in our department.
You're listening to Pracademically Speaking, a production of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. Please share or cite any of the guests or content you hear on this podcast, but do not alter the audio in any way. Check for resources or publications mentioned in this episode in the show notes. Now, back to the host.
This is Brett Buckland with Bill Niccolo, Deputy Superintendent for Facility Security and Special Operations for the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections. We've been discussing his career in the department and his thoughts on reducing prison violence. We want to go a little bit further in the weeds now, and let's pivot to the Department of Corrections here in Pennsylvania. Bill, what are some of the things that the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections is doing to combat and reduce prison violence?
I think one of the most prolific things that the department is doing is the shift in ideology to an intelligence-led corrections system, right? We have a Bureau of Investigations and Intelligence, and the intelligence component of that bureau has really, since really probably 2016 to the current day, has grown tremendously. And the work that bureau does is pretty amazing work. In 2018, I talked a little bit earlier about, we had a statewide lockdown for 2 weeks. We locked all of our facilities down because we just needed to hit the reset button and figure out how these drugs were getting in there and how we were going to combat those drugs. And we did a lot of things during that time.
This was when we had a number of staff that were exposed, apparently, to drugs that were getting in the facility, right?
Right. We were having synthetic cannabinoids, which is a liquefied form of synthetic cannabinoid, put on paper and introduced, and it looks like a regular sheet of paper. The inmates would break that paper down, and they would ingest it. Typically, they would smoke it, but they didn't really know what it was, right? What is a synthetic cannabinoid? Sometimes it was pesticides. Sometimes it was herbicides that they were being sprayed on these things, and they were lighting them, creating a smoke, and then inhaling that stuff. And obviously, the outcome of that is not going to be good. And unfortunately, some of our staff were exposed to that, and some of our inmates were exposed to that, and thinking that they were ingesting something that they weren't, right? But what we saw around that whole epidemic was not only the introduction of the drugs and the impact that ingesting those drugs had, but the market that creates. There's money, right, to get those drugs into a facility, to then develop a distribution network to move those drugs throughout the facility. And you can imagine there's going to be rival groups that want to control that market. And a direct result of that is there's going to be violence, right? They want to control that market somehow. These are individuals who, this is how they operated on the street in a lot of cases, and they brought that business model that worked for them up to a point on the street, and they brought that into the prison, and they replicated that there. And so we saw an uptick in some violence around those things, the debts that were incurred, and the violence that resulted as individuals not being able to pay their debts. But one of the ways we combated that was really through intelligence. So they developed an intelligence lieutenant at every single facility and coordinators at the central office level. And they developed a tool called the Intelligence Management System. They stood up an analytics unit, so they would take all this information that they were getting. They were going out and interviewing inmates inside the facilities. They were, reviewing phone calls and messaging and all those sources of information that they had access to. And they were collating that into a system, and then that was the analytics division was able to pull that out and create these products that were actually usable in real time, and they could take actionable intelligence, right? And they could give it to the administrators and decision makers, and then they could turn that around and prevent, really, in a lot of cases, or disrupt these networks. And the argument can be made, and a strong argument can be made that helped to reduce violence. And I think it's had a tremendous effect on the way that we do business. And I really couldn't imagine us doing it without that approach.
What other things are we doing? You talked about drug markets leading to violence. What are some of the other things that lead to violence in prison, and what are we doing to address those?
Yeah, you obviously have your gang-related issues. We call them security threat groups inside of our facilities. So those beefs from the street spill over into the facilities. And it's just like you have a block on the street and somebody wants to take control of that block. Well, that same mindset occurs inside of our facility. So there is a lot of that. That is also combated through that intelligence division in BII. Another thing that the department is doing now, off the heels of the Prison Violence Consortium, is that we're standing up a violence reduction committee within the facilities, central office level. We'll get some subject matter experts out in the facility, some people in the jails that have that experience and have that knowledge, and we're going to come up with some strategies on the way that we define things, the way that we look at things, and help us come up with pathways to some good solutions to combat violence moving forward.
Well, we do know that this last summer was a pretty bad summer for violence in our facilities. And so it's something that we're constantly doing everything we can to reduce. You mentioned the Prison Violence Task Force that is just kicking off. What are some things, as we're winding down here, that we can look to, some innovations that we can look to in the future? Maybe technology. We don't want you to give away the trade secrets here. We need to stay ahead of our population in terms of what we're doing. But what can you tell us about some of the things on the horizon in terms of technologies or innovations that we can look to in the future for reducing violence?
Yeah, so to me, the predictive analytics is obviously the best way. You want to get ahead of it before it begins. So I'm excited about AI and this transition.
Yeah.
I think it's going to revolutionize things that are going on outside of our prisons. So the earlier that we can get on board with that and figure out how we can apply those solutions to risk management inside of our prisons, I think the better off we're going to be.
So just take AI for a second.
Yeah.
How could that be used practically to prevent violence?
Video analytics is one of the things I think is probably the most logical solution that we could utilize AI. So in a perfect world, facial recognition, video analytics, those recognition softwares using a computer to determine that, hey, we've got this group of people and they're kind of congregating together and get those early warnings. I mean, this isn't stuff that's going to tell us, 4 or 5 days in advance in every aspect in that regard with using video analytics. But it's something that can maybe give us an early warning that something's about to happen. And when you're a corrections officer inside the facility and you've been there long enough, you kind of get that inherent feel on a facility. Hey, something's not right on this housing unit today. This day room or this yard area is just something's not right, right? The computer can do that as well, and that's what we would go for. The other things are, we use it to some extent now. There's some audio analytics tools that are being utilized now by the intelligence group during phone calls and messaging that can kind of give us some early indicators. The other thing would be just classification tools to kind of predict who has a higher propensity for violence, and then we make good decisions using our classification system to make sure that we're appropriately housing those individuals in the right places, and we're not kind of inundating a specific area with a lot of individuals who have this high propensity for violence. So those are some of the things that I think that AI can help us with moving forward.
Well, Bill, we're unfortunately out of time. I want to have you back on the show because you have an amazing career, really interesting stories to tell. So let's do it again. But thanks so much for joining us. It was great to speak to you and learn about your career and various positions in the department and your work. And thanks for protecting our population, both the inmates and the staff, and making sure that we run safe and secure prisons. So thanks for being on.
Glad to be here, Brett, and more than happy to come back and do it again. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Check out Pracademically Speaking wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. This is the conversation where ideas and numbers get real, on the ground and in practice. Pracademically Speaking is a production of the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections.